You're listening to Mind Your Own Business. Hi, I'm Scott Sullivan, your host. Mind Your Own Business is a weekly show that we do talking to some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs, helping you to be better at being a business professional by learning from all of the experience that these entrepreneurs and CEOs bring from all around the world. Exclusively here on Inspired News Radio. And now it's time for Mind Your Own Business.
Well, it's a great day right here on Inspired News Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mind Your Own Business. Hi, I am Scott Sullivan. As you know, every week, I am your tour guide. I am the person that's going to guide you on this this journey and this adventure that we have every single week that we call Mind Your Own Business. This particular week, I have got a successful entrepreneur that has over 30 years in his business, in his profession. He is by far the world's expert on this particular type of business. And I will not, we're just not going to let this get away today without picking his brain about things that we do every single day today that we take for granted. And of course, I am talking about computer science, applications, and all the things that go into that. And our guest today is President, CEO, and founder of Applied Visions Incorporated, Frank Zingini. How are you today? And welcome to Mind Your Own Business.
I am well, Scott, and I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Well, I am thrilled to have you because we take so much for granted. You know, we today, we're going to talk about this migration to go from the world of digital to the world of from the world of analog to the world of digital. And we're going to talk about, for those that were born in the last, 20 years or so, they don't know what it's like when the days when you had to actually work with a punch card or do not spindle, fold, or mutilate means nothing to them. But yeah, to us, it actually does, right?
Oh, it brings back fond memories.
So today we're going to talk about the Applied Visions Incorporated and what it is that you guys do. So why don't you take just the first 5 minutes before we dive into the origin story and tell us a little bit about today, in today's world, what is Applied Visions and what is it that you are doing now? And then we're going to dive into the origin story and talk about maybe when you were a young man.
Sure thing. Well, what we do in short is we build digital businesses and products for our clients. We're a services company. We do things for other people. And what we like to do is we like to help create or build businesses and products to help grow those businesses. And that spans the entire digital domain now, from cloud apps to desktop apps, mobile apps, physical devices, Internet of Things devices, all these things tie together to create a product or a source of revenue for a business. And we help build those. The name Applied Visions came from the idea that there are a lot of people out there with visions for how to build or grow a business, and we help them make those visions real.
That's excellent. So the things that we take for granted every single day, I pick up my, smartphone of any generation. You just pick whatever brand you like that you have, and you open it up, and those little squares on there are, we all know them as apps, but it's sort of like if somebody's asked me, how do you make a phone call? I would say, you type 10 digits in, or you hit the dial button of the person's, the contact information, and it'll dial it automatically. And they say, no. How does the cell phone work? I wouldn't have a clue how that actually works. But I know that if I push that app, something happens that allows me to take a picture, send that picture to somebody, some action or some series of actions take place. And your company is the one that helps create those from the ground up, right?
Well, it all depends on your definition of the ground up. What you said is interesting, that we take all of this for granted, that when you tap on that Amazon icon, the app comes up and you can buy something, and there is a breathtaking amount of stuff that have to work and work right to make that happen. And that is the fruits of the labors of millions of people in history. I wouldn't say we do that from the ground up, because Carl Sagan said, if you want to make an apple pie from scratch, first you have to create the universe. What we do is we build that last little step in the chain, that digital connection to your customer, which is the mobile app. And it's whatever that app is talking to inside your business, which nowadays is usually some cloud component of the whole experience. And then the piece that ties that back into your business. We tend to look at these things not as apps on a phone or apps in the cloud or anything like that, but really one unified digital experience between you and your customers or your business partners that has a number of different doors into the room. One of those doors could be your website. Another door can be your mobile app. Another door might be some intelligence in your product that's out in the field. All those things are different doorways into the unified application that really is your digital business.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things, I'll give you a personal experience. So it's just recently, I pick up my phone. It goes ding or makes some noise or vibrates or whatever. And I know I've got some type of alert. I look at it and it's an email. And when I open the email, it's from my car. I mean, it's literally from the manufacturer. Sure. And the company who built my car and my dealership telling me that my car is telling them that it's time for service.
Yep.
And I'm like, I mean, I'm completely blown away. I went in and actually told my wife, I said, my car just sent me an email and said, it's time to get my oil changed.
Exactly.
and I'm like, whoa. I mean, that's where we have come with this, right? I mean, we used to get the little sticker on the windshield and now I get an email on my phone.
Well, and that's part of really what I was describing when I said that today, what consumers have is a digital relationship with the companies they work with. So you bought a car from some manufacturer that now has the ability to continue to interact with you throughout your ownership of that vehicle, and pushing maintenance to you, pushing other feature requests to you. Maybe they're trying to get you to sign up for OnStar or something like that. It's a seamless relationship with the business. And your car is just one participant in that relationship. And we have clients doing similar things in all sorts of industries where the devices, the products that they put in the field now have the ability to monitor themselves, report on issues within themselves, report back that they need to be provisioned with some sort of a consumable like fuel or whatever. It's all tied together. That's why I said earlier, it's not that we have all these individual solutions like IoT devices and mobile apps and so forth. You have one unified digital experience.
That's crazy. So let's just clarify a couple of things for our listeners that aren't aware. IoT stands for the Internet of Things, right? Is that a correct statement?
I did jump into jargon. Sorry about that.
That's okay. And that the Internet of Things is the fact, is that interaction that other things have with each other that may be in the same proximity or may not be in the same proximity, but they're communicating in some form via, whether it's, you know, communication protocols like Bluetooth or internet or those types of things, right?
Yep. Okay. The key to all this is that the cost of obtaining that kind of connectivity has been driven down so steeply that you can afford to put this into devices, into things. You know, most of us now have thermostats that are on the internet. We have things like that. And as you said, it could be Bluetooth, it could be Wi-Fi speaking to some local gateway, or it could be a 4G communications path up through a cellular network into the cloud. All these things are available at affordable levels to be able to incorporate them into products. And our engineering has gotten good enough that you can squeeze an awful lot of service out of a single inexpensive coin cell battery.
Yes, that makes sense. Okay. So then what about, so that's all, you know, business that is like business to business or business to consumer. So those are things where the digital experience from the interaction with the consumer. What about internally? Like, what if I have a process that tells, you know, if I have a warehouse distribution type of program or something, and I have somebody takes the last I don't know, widget off of the shelf and ships it to Joe, then do you also work on those internal pieces that say, hey, when the last one comes out of the bin, don't forget to generate a purchase order to that manufacturer to get some more widgets?
Sure. We loosely refer to that as industrial automation, where you're basically using the same concepts and the same technologies, but all within a single organization to improve operations, to do things like you described, or to monitor. You know, one particular engagement we have involves monitoring temperatures in very hazardous conditions where you don't necessarily want to have to send people in to, you know, run wires to a thermometer or change the batteries in a wireless thermometer. So, you know, we've been tasked with designing a simple but robust temperature sensor that can run on a battery for years because you don't want to go in there and replace it anytime soon because it's so hazardous. Things like that are all under the umbrella of industrial automation. There's a lot you can do to improve the operations of a business, whether it's a physical business building things or an information or knowledge-based business with people by using digital technology.
So to dive into the origin story a little bit, I mean, because I got to tell you, this is fascinating. I'm an uber geek, so I'm already a fan. I mean, so I'm so geeked out right now. It's like I'm like, my mind is racing a million miles a minute. But
I got that from listening to a lot of your shows. I like that. I'm the same way.
So to dive into, you know, some of the history of this, I look back and I look at your bio and I look at some of the things that you did as a younger man and some of the things that you did even prior to starting your company. But when you started your company, I'm just going to pick this point on the time continuum of 1987. How much, I mean, I know where I am today, right? But in 1987, I was writing things down with a pencil that was still graphite on a piece of, you know, paper, you know, just past chipping on a slate with a chisel. I mean, how were you helping your customers achieve this in, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s? When did this come up to this vision, be too punny here, but this vision, how do you do something like that when, I mean, there wasn't an internet connection. How does DARPA come into play in 1987?
Well, okay. Well, actually DARPA didn't come into play until later, but I'll roll back a little bit on the timeline here and say, it's really all about solutions, about solving problems, about creating opportunities, using whatever technology is available at the time. You know, we had computers. We've been doing interesting things with computing technology. Really, I in my own sort of personal view of history, the breakthrough event of that sort of technology was the moon landing, which we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of. The fact that we were able to launch a rocket, navigate to the moon, land, and make it home on computing technology that kids in high school today would snicker at was pretty amazing. Some brilliant engineers squeezed a lot of capability out of what was available at the time. And of course, engineers being engineers, they relentlessly improved it. And by the time I got on the scene and was in college and was doing this sort of work, you know, we had kind of evolved to what were then known as mini computers, which were, you know, refrigerator sized computers that were for their day very powerful. Most people today don't really have any association with these things. The only one that's kind of lived on in history is the DEC PDP-8. Because that was the one that the folks down at AT&T Bell Labs used to create the Unix operating system and the C programming language. And even today, students pursuing engineering or computer science are at least exposed to that in some discussions in school. So that there's a real key touch point in history there. And that's when I came on the scene. I was originally building, in fact, aircraft and submarine simulators and nuclear power plant simulators on mini computers. And it took some clever programming, and you had to do a lot of grunt work. And sort of what was the hallmark of those years is you had to almost create the universe to get your job done. We actually built custom operating systems for various things that we did because these computers didn't really have operating systems in them. And then that grew. And then suddenly we had what loosely became referred to as workstation class machines. Intel made a whole line of those because that was how they would be able to sell their microprocessors. So they were kind of leading the way in that industry. There were other companies making these sort of, oh, like bread box size things that you'd put in a big rack and you could do even more with those. And then there were operating systems that would run on those and Unix became a little more commonplace and Intel had their own operating system called RMX. And that's around when we actually started the business, when I first got into doing it. So I had done a lot of work at two, what I call day jobs prior to starting the business. The second one, we were building computer graphics equipment with custom designed hardware boards and video boards. And those were all running on Intel microprocessors with a purpose-built operating system that we created ourselves. And then I had the opportunity to get into business for myself. In fact, the first thing I did was build a helicopter simulator for another company because they asked me if I would do that for them. And I said, sure, I could do that. I was a little bit bored with my day job and had the opportunity to do something fresh and took it. So That's we amazing. Could do a lot with the technology we had at the time. And really, you make do with what you have. And as each step along the line, the technology gets better, you do more.
And today you can get a helicopter flying simulation app on your phone for 99 cents or free and play it. And it's got and it's got gyroscopic, you know, motion built into the phone. So as you tilt the phone, it flies. It's like, gosh, can you imagine back in the 80s and 90s that when that was going on, if you had that technology? I see where you're going, though, that you.
Yeah, there were companies building visual simulation systems that would do the simulated out the window view for the aircraft simulators that we worked on. And these systems cost upwards of $12 million. There was a company in Utah called Evans and Sutherland that kind of led the industry on that. And the fidelity of the imagery that they could put out then would make people just laugh today compared to what you can see on a game console or even on your phone. So yeah, everything just gets better. So then your expectations go up and you can do more and more and more with what you have at your disposal. What's nice about technology now, and forgive me for jumping around the timeline, is
that's all right.
Engineers now can spend more time figuring out how to deliver actual value to the product and less time trying to figure out how just to make the lights blink and the data flow. Because there's so much infrastructure now that does that for us, you can focus on the actual product or the actual solution much more than we could back then. As I said, we had to create the universe first.
Right. And you don't have to build the universe. Now you can buy off the shelf kind of universe stuff and then just put whatever you want on it. I mean, I remember somebody I had on the show last year, he said, like Henry Ford used to say, you could have any color you wanted of the Model T, except as long as it was black.
Right. Yep.
And then he said you could have any shape that you wanted in the universe as long as it was a square.
Yep.
Because we didn't know how to break a pixel in the early days of computers because he said, think of Pong. Even the ball going back and forth was just a square.
Yep. Yep. And now you can do so much. Now you don't even need to, you don't even need a computer now. You just go up into the cloud and computers are just there for you somewhere.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Wow. The world that you have seen change. And I know, you know, when I talk to millennials, I had a gentleman on the show just last week that he was 26 years old and he invented an app or he came up with an app that reached out to his consumers and he was able to put information in their hands every day that was very valuable and they needed it and wanted it and they were willing to pay for it. And now I look at what you're talking about is, you know, if you wanted to do that in the early 90s, you know, it was almost a postcard.
Yeah. Those things just weren't possible, but we were doing other things that were possible.
Yeah.
It's always been a matter of focusing not on the technology, but on the problem to be addressed and the value to be delivered, and then looking to see how much of that you can achieve with the technologies that's available.
And how did you find yourself on this path? When did you wake up one morning and go, oh, I can solve that problem? I mean, obviously we talk about the helicopter simulator, but earlier, I mean, when, you know, were you in high school, grade school? I mean, when did you wake up one morning and go, oh, that's obviously easy to solve. We just need a mini computer and 7,000 hours of programming. I mean, so somewhere along the way, you had to figure out there was a business behind all this.
Well, the business idea came later, and I think this is probably typical of a lot of people who get into this pursuit of technology. You tend to fall in love with the idea first, the fact that you can do certain things and make things just happen that weren't happening before. I started out interested really more in the electrical engineering side of this. I actually studied electrical engineering in college at first, because I liked building things. I liked making things. And I actually credit that to my high school had, along with auto shop and wood shop and metal shop, all of which I took, they had in the industrial arts program an electronics class taught by a great guy named Bruce Mateer, who sadly passed a few years ago, and he was a terrific teacher, and he taught this class about how to build things with electronics, how electronics work. I built an AM radio from these kits that he had, and it was really kind of a rush to figure out how to put these pieces together and make something that actually worked, whether it was a clock or a radio or whatever other projects we did. We were making things work. And I'm sure, you know, artists who take up clay and find that they love sculpting have similar feelings. It's just some of us, like you and me, as geeky people, we get a rush out of building something that works. And then I stumbled onto software also in my high school. We had a time-sharing terminal, which is a phrase that you may recognize and probably 90% of your audience have never heard before.
Fortran and COBOL, they've never heard of either.
I was programming in BASIC, and I kind of taught myself to program on this thing, and once again got that rush that I could spend time writing these things down and figuring things out and then run a program that would solve kind of some kind of a problem. So it was that connection to the process that I got into first, and that's why I pursued it in school. And then while I was in school and started taking internships and working in industry, I got to see that you could actually apply this stuff to solving real problems. So the first business I was working for was that one that made the simulators. And there is no more fun in this industry than building an F-14 simulator and landing it on an aircraft carrier. That was great stuff.
Oh, man, that's so cool.
We got to do all that kind of thing. And that's when I was really hooked, just saying you can write code and make something like this happen. And then you could write a little more code and make it better. It's just it's a rush. And to this day, I enjoy that rush. It's the creativity.
That is so cool. So you're working your, I love how you say you're working your day job. Somebody, you know, brings you over. So then when did you, was it after the helicopter, you know, simulator that you decided, okay, I can do this for other people and actually charge them money for what I love to do, which is so cool.
The transition was sort of interesting because what happened was, as I said, I had a second job where I worked at a company still in business today and is really kind of an industry leader in computer graphics for television. The company's name is Chiron, and it's to the point where the word Chiron has become an industry term where they say Chiron that, or it was in the Chiron, and that may or may not have actually been generated by a Chiron, but that's the word they use. And I was there for 5 years and built a bunch of products for them. And it was great stuff, but I'd gotten to the point where I was kind of doing version 5 of something. It was not terribly exciting. And that was when I was approached by that simulator company to do the helicopter thing as sort of a moonlighting job on my spare time, nights and weekends. And that's what I did because it was fun and I made a few extra bucks. And it was the end of that when they asked me if I would be interested in doing another one. And I thought, I could probably do this as an independent consultant. And I quit my day job and I did that one and then got another client while I was doing that one. So I was doing two and then got a third and got to be too much. So I hired a guy and hired another guy. And I kind of grew into it organically. I didn't wake up one morning and said, I have an idea. I'm going to start a business and in 30 years, I'll be doing all this great stuff. No, I just thought I could do this and it'll be fun. because everything I do is different than the every other thing I've done. And that's the real excitement of what I do, is I'm always being exposed to new technologies, new businesses, new customers, new markets, new everything. I haven't been bored a day in the last 30 years.
That's fantastic. Okay. So what's new for you? Where are you going from here? What does the immediate future hold for Applied Visions Incorporated?
Well, it's interesting. You introduced me as an entrepreneur who's been in business for 30 years. And I thought, it's probably not fair to call myself an entrepreneur. It's like being an overnight sensation after 20 years of experience. But I'm still an entrepreneur at heart. And one of the things that I've been doing over the past several years is, while we love to build products and services and capabilities for other companies, and will continue to do so forever, along the way, I've always been looking for opportunities to create products of our own, or to somehow participate in the creation of products, because I like the idea of bringing products to market. And I've done that plenty of times for other companies. And so I'm always looking for ways to do that myself. And we've done that. We've spawned a pretty successful startup in the cybersecurity space. And that grew out of another, and now I'm kind of bouncing around the timeline a little bit here, and I apologize for being scattered, but along the way of building products for other people, for a variety of business and economic and historical reasons, I got into also doing work for the federal government, specifically research and development work in the areas of cybersecurity and cybersecurity visualization. That's where DARPA came in, as you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. This is around 2000 that I started to pursue that, because it seemed like a very necessary thing to be done. Cybersecurity was just becoming understood to be an issue from a business perspective. Around 2000, 2001, the economy was a bit shaky. The technology industry was a bit shaky. The world had discovered that the internet, the emerging internet, would allow you to have certain kinds of software written offshore for much less money. So I had a lot of customers doing that. So I was looking for a way to expand the business in areas that would not be sensitive to that. And that, because of my personal experience in building simulators for the Air Force and the Navy and the Marines, I understood government contracting. So we found our way into doing government-funded research in cybersecurity as a way of developing capabilities, learning more about that industry, and supporting the business with sort of a different leg of the stool, one being federal money, one being commercial money. So that all led to, a few years ago, a particular piece of technology that we developed for the Department of Homeland Security that we thought had commercial applicability to help everybody write secure software. And we spun off a company to do that. It's called CodeDX. And we took some venture money into that just last year and hoping to grow that. So it's a long-winded answer to your question of what are we doing now. But what I'm doing now is looking to not only build businesses for other people as a service company, but also to create businesses by creating products like this and turning them into separate companies.
That's fantastic. That's the backbone of our economy right there. You know, small business employing people, both, you know, domestic and foreign, that help to, you know, build future businesses. Yep. That's exactly, you know, do, and then you repeat.
Yep. So, and that's why I'm willing to still take the name entrepreneur in your introduction. I'll hold on to that, because I try to approach pretty much everything I do with an entrepreneurial spirit, because if you settle into things, if you don't accept the fact that in any given day, everything you know can change, and everything you're doing needs to change. If you don't live that way, you can get blindsided, or you can get lazy or complacent. So I do try to, you know, live like an entrepreneur, even though I've been doing this for 30 years.
Well, especially if you live in Moore's Law, you know, if you live inside of Moore's Law, you know, every few months, everything you know is changed. Yep. It is completely different from what it was just a few years ago. Yep. Oh, that's crazy. So, I mean, I remember being a young man, you know, laying on the living room floor because my father had just bought this giant, you know, console color TV on in July of 1969 so that we could stay up late and watch, you know, Neil Armstrong step off the lunar module. I mean, you mentioned it 50 years ago. And I look at the things that came to our world out of this space race. You know, the fact is, I read these articles about, like, we didn't have things like, you know, battery operated tools, right? There was no such thing as a cordless drill driver or anything else until we, you know, had to figure out a way to operate in space, you know, where there isn't an extension cord connected to a grid somewhere, connected to a power plant in Iowa.
you could do a whole show on the societal and economical benefits of the space program. And, you know, there's plenty of people out there who always question, why do we bother doing that? Why don't we spend the money down here? But you're absolutely right. And as I said earlier about computing, the need to solve insoluble problems with the technology you have at hand means you have to invent an awful lot of really difficult and interesting things. People take cordless drills for granted now, but you're absolutely right. If you're going to do work in space, you need something that can deliver a lot of torque on a battery, and they had to invent those things. It's kind of a subject near and dear to my heart because I'm speaking to you from Long Island, and Long Island has a storied history in aerospace, and a particularly storied history in the space part of aerospace. The lunar module was designed and built by a company that used to be known as Grumman here on Long Island. They're now part of Northrop Grumman, but it's a point of real pride for the island as a whole that, you know, we had a hand in that moon landing, and some amazing work was done by some amazing people. And a lot of those people were the moms and dads of my friends when I was growing up.
Yes, that's indeed. And plus the math, just the math that went into it, and those, you know, unsolvable problems that you talked to. I had a friend of mine was in aeronautics, and he said in 1969, it would be like taking a pea and putting it in a gun and shooting it across the ocean and landing in a shot glass. Yep. And somebody had to figure out that math. And that's where, you know, some of this computing, you know, calculations and some of the things that we had to invent. That doesn't even count getting them home. That was just getting them there.
Oh, yeah. As I said earlier, it was just a breathtaking number of things that have to be solved.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that sounds fantastic. So now, as everybody knows, as a fan of Mind Your Own Business, if you're a listener, we've talked about the origin story. There's really, really cool things that came out with Frank and how he found his way onto this platform and moving in that direction. And now living in the true entrepreneurial spirit and spinning off and getting more venture capital and building other companies and using these big, huge projects into turning them into products that are commercialized that can be available for everybody. I mean, that's the American way right there. So how do our listeners then get a hold of you? How do we engage? What are the things that we can do to help you? You know, who's your ideal client? You know, I have thousands of people all over the United States and some internationally. What do we do to help you to the next level? And what are the things that if we are intrigued by the products and services, I mean, obviously everybody can go to avi.com, which is Applied Visuals or Visions Incorporated.com. But what else can we do?
Well, you can also email me anytime at frankz@avi.com. I love talking about this stuff. I'm an open book. Anybody wants to hear more about this, contact me. I'd be thrilled to talk to you about it.
So if I'm a business owner and I need an app, I mean, is that the kind of stuff that you'll do for us? I mean, who's your ideal client? Is this a $1 million project? Is it $100,000 project? Because we have lots of small businesses that listen to my show every week. And I have a lot of CEOs and entrepreneurs, and they all kind of struggle with that same thing is, you know, they have a plethora of things to do, but they need to pick the ones that make the biggest impact.
Sure.
And a lot of times it has to do with data visualization, and it has a lot of interfacing with the with clients. And so a lot of that, you know, kind of revolves around that smartphone and the app and the website and things like that. So what is that? What can you offer to our listeners? And then what can our listeners do to find you the right client?
Well, for starters, you know, you said, is it $1 million thing? Is it a $10,000? We've worked across the spectrum. We've done multi-year, multi-million dollar app development projects for very large companies. And we've helped startups just get off the ground by building a proof of concept for them. I'm more energized at the potential for what we're doing to turn into something successful than just how big the project is. I've done $10,000 or $20,000 projects for companies that later on led to multi-year, multi-million dollar relationships. So no job is too big or too small. That's not an issue. The real issue is, and you said, what's the ideal customer? And I guess the ideal customer is someone who gets that this isn't about an app or a few lines of code, or can you just fix this, or some incremental thing. It's about my business has or needs a digital relationship with my customer or my business partners. It's a unified thing. And I understand that this is transformational to my business. This is, how do I tap into this whole universe that has been created and increase the value of my relationship with my customers or my business partners? It's understanding that big picture. Everything else is just planning and working and compromise.
Conference
and all
locked.
Stuff that you have to go through to succeed, to make something work. And it's hard work, it's roll up your sleeves, but it all stems from that vision. This is where the name of my company came. It all stems from the vision. As long as you have that vision that this stuff can make my business grow, we'll help you get there.
Okay. So what you really need then is you need to have the vision, the ideation, you need to understand. So it helps if the person that's reaching out to you understands their business extremely well and has a clear understanding of where they want to be. They don't need to know how to get there,
right?
Because that's your job.
Exactly.
Okay. So pull out a map and say, I want to get to New York from California, and then let Frank and his team pick the route, but they know the destination, and they have a clear vision of where you have a clear vision, and you're able to communicate that to Frank and his team, and they'll get you there. That sounds like a winning combination right there.
That's
so
right.
AVI.com, real simple, go there, engage. You know, of course you can go to Inspired News Radio anytime. Just go to our website. We'll have a link to all of Frank's contact information. You'll be able to send him an email. You'll be able to go to his website. Of course you can interact with us on all the social medias. We'll make sure that all of that contact information is there so that you can get a hold of him and engage with AVI. So I have to tell you, this is, we could spend another hour talking about this. I love this stuff. I love the fact
that,
oh man. I hate that we're running out of time, but I am so excited and so thankful that you are part of the Inspired News Radio family and that you decided to be a guest on Mind Your Own Business, because I got to tell you, this is exactly so near and dear to my heart. I remember the time when I was in college. Now, this is years and years and years ago, as everybody knows that knows me. They know I have a lot of gray hair, what's left of it. But it's so funny is that I remember when we actually wrote a program in Fortran to turn on and off a servo that actually moved a light switch up and down in another room. We actually wrote a program to turn off a light in the other room, and we all thought we were geniuses.
How cool was it the first time that worked?
Oh my gosh.
I was making little red lights blink, and I thought I was like a god. And it's just such a great rush to just write a piece of code and have it actually make a change in the world around it. It's really cool.
It is very cool. And that was so interesting to me. And that's probably why I ended up being such a geek. So I can't tell you, Frank, what an honor it has been to have you here. And I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you do, because without guys like you, the world that we live in just wouldn't exist the same, right? I mean, I think back in those days when, you know, you had to, I can't imagine. I think I mentioned to you when we were getting to know each other, as I said, I had a thing called a pencil, and I actually wrote it on a piece of a thing called paper, where we actually had to write something down. And if you wanted to share it with somebody, you had to rewrite it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there wasn't even a copy machine.
And you know, as I said earlier, what I've focused on is using technology as it changes and as it improves to do bigger and better things. But I never lose sight of the work that has gone into the underlying technology that has changed. We were talking about apps and the phenomenal number of things that all have to work right just to make a cell phone call, let alone send an email from my phone. And there are countless people who have developed every single piece of that technology that enables all that. And we stand on their shoulders.
We do. And I used to have to go get in my car and drive to the library to learn, you know, a piece of information. And now I can just, you know, speak it to my device sitting on my desk and say, you know, hey, Google, or hey, Siri, whatever, tell me something about this. And the next thing you know, you're getting the information. And, you know, I'm still just dumbfounded. In the 60s, when I was listening to Star Trek and they were actually talking to their computers, and that was such science fiction. And now today I talk to my phone all day long.
And you probably yell at it.
Oh, yes, we do. But I had a guest a few weeks ago come on and said that every 15-year-old should have to go spend, you know, a week in China and a week in India to understand that the difference between a first world and a third world problem, right? To the fact that my daughter loses her mind because she only has two bars of service, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good thought experiment. And I think it would have a very good overall effect on society if you could actually pull that off. But yeah, just try taking the kid's phone away for a day and see how it feels.
Yes, I have gotten to know the top of my grandkids' heads very well. Well, listen, Frank, thank you so much for being here. As always, I always sign off every week. I tell everybody, you know, thank you very much as a listener for Mind Your Own Business. I could not do what I do without you. It's so super fulfilling to me. There's nothing better than to open an email or get a tweet or get a direct message or something on Facebook that says, love the show, love Frank. Don't forget to reach out and let Frank know. Give him some of the love. Guys, we appreciate you so much. If it weren't for you, I couldn't do what I do, and that's what means everything to me. So remember, Inspired News Radio is a place where positive programs are delivered to the world that are designed to inspire, inform, educate, and motivate, and we did that today. Frank, you are a big part of that. Thank you so much for being a guest. I want to stay in touch and find out how things go with your new venture. And let's connect in the near future and let us know the new changes that we can expect in the digital world that you live in.
Absolutely. Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure being on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And like I say every week, guys, mind your own business, because nobody else is going to. See you next week.
You've been listening to Mind Your Own Business right here on InspiredNewsRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in each week as we interview some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs in the world. You can reach us on Twitter at INR Talk Radio. Always use the hashtag MYOB for Mind Your Own Business. Make sure you stop by and check out all of the past episodes and all the great things that are available on our website, www.inspirednewsradio.com. There's great resources there that you can find for all of our other shows, too. Thanks for being a part of the Inspired News Radio family. Until next week, Remember to mind your own business.